Welcome everyone to Phone Show Chat. This is podcast 861, recording this on Saturday the 5th of July 2025. I'm Steve Litchfield in Reading. This is a catch-up show with a certain Mr. Ted Salmon up in North Wales.
Hello everyone. Hello, hello, hello. And it's lovely to be back with you again from a very warm and muggy North Wales indeed.
Well, throw open a few windows and put a few fans on. I'm sure no one will mind.
I've got my fans on, but I daren't open the window because it's next to a train line.
Yes, that'll be the 1755 from Conway or whatever. Yep. SteveLitchfield.com for the show notes, Ted Salmon for everything Ted does, and also links in various places to buy us beers and coffees. If you like the podcast, running now for, 18 years, something crazy like that. I've been to the Apple store this week. I'll come to that a bit later on. First of all, there were a few phone launches and bits and pieces in the week, Ted. The Nothing Phone 3 launched, which I think is worth noting because it is a bit different. Now, I asked Gemini to summarise its specs and it gave me about 2 pages worth. I said, no, shorter, please. And it did a very good job of condensing 2 pages down to about half a page. So there's the Nothing Phone 3 is Nothing's first flagship, which is a phrase which I will question later. It features a unique transparent design with a glyph matrix micro LED display on the back for interactive glyph toys. I'm disliking this already. Gemini says, key specs, 6.7-inch 1.5K AMOLED display, 120Hz refresh, Snapdragon 8S Gen 4, comes with 12 or 16 gig of RAM and 256 or 512 gigabytes of storage. Usual triple camera with a 3x telephoto, and it's got a 5150 milliamp hour battery internationally. That's the one we're going to get. Or if you're in India, you get a 5500 milliamp hour battery, which is a bit weird. It says it's silicon carbon, which I do believe, because they nothing do tend to be on the slightly risky cutting edge. But I can only assume that there are shipping regulations in terms of the number of watt hours or ampere hours of power you can actually store and ship in products of a certain size on certain transport routes. So I'm assuming it's a bit like the Royal Mail saying we won't cover you for, you know, shipping power banks and so forth. So rather weird, really? To have different battery sizes in different parts of the world. I haven't heard of that before.
I've heard of that before, and it nearly always relates to India. India get the same device with a bigger battery, and I've kind of naively probably put it down to the fact that in India or any developing nations there might still be families sharing a device and not so readily available to recharge things or whatever, but as I say, maybe that's very naive of me.
Or maybe they've just got laxer regulations because they just want all the tech they can get. Therefore, they haven't got quite such strict, you can't ship this or you can't ship that. It's got 65-watt wired, 15-watt wireless charging, running Android 15 with Nothing OS 3.5, 5 years of OS.
Don't gloss over that. You skip straight past that. 15-watt wireless charging. This is the first, and that's great. All of the previous Nothing phones and CMF phones, that's been the big win for me. No wireless charging, and also 65 watts. So they've upped that from 50 watts, and that's really good as well, because these devices charge with a cable really quickly in my experience. So yeah, kudos.
Yeah, the overall specs don't seem too bad, and the price, we'll come to the price in a moment. It's promised 5 years of OS updates, 7 years of security updates, which I applaud full well. But it's kind of not really a true flagship, I would say, in terms of the processor. It's not a Snapdragon 8 Elite, etc. But the most controversial things are, A, the price, which is $799, €799, and £799, which seems to make a mockery of international currency rates. But so I guess we get stiffed for that, Ted, because $799, I think, is arguably the most money of the three. But £800 for this, would you say that's right, or too expensive?
No. It's too expensive, and I think that the right price for this should be $599. I think it's £200 too much, and if it was $599, I think that they would do an awful lot better. Yeah. I just also like to correct something you said that Gemini had told you, because someone will get letters say that Gemini is rubbish and doesn't know what it's talking about. You said it was a 6.7-inch screen, but it's not. It's a 6.67-inch screen. I know it's a little thing, but it stuck out in my mind. Yeah, £599, I think, that they should have pitched this at. You're right, the chipset's not that special in terms of what else is out there at this kind of price. It has got IP68 rating, which it has never, they've never done that before. They did have some 5.4s going on. And I'm not quite sure really what Cuddly Carl is doing with Nothing Phone with this. It seems to be pricing itself out of the market to some degree. The Essential Space AI feature, I'm also not really sure about that, to be honest. I play with that on the CMF phone. Like, it's so locked down into itself, and not open in any way that you think, well, who's going to really want to use that? I don't quite get the whole concept. And this whole new device, the 3 series, being priced at that place in the market, I'm hoping it'll probably come down over time. But aluminium frame and glass back. I mean, what was wrong with the plastics and the, as we said before on the show, plastic is perfectly good enough and robust, and yet they're bringing aluminium and glass into it just to make it feel like it's premium and a flagship. I don't know. That lighting thing on the back as well. I'm not sure about that. I do wonder if the lighting thing on the back will grow bigger in time. I think that the way in which they did it before with the bigger strips
The
is actually
glyphs, yeah.
better than that. Yeah, it's better than this new all new glyph or whatever it's called. So I don't think that that's very smart personally. But the one of the biggest things that you keep banging on about is the design, isn't it? And the camera modules.
Yeah, if this was a beautiful phone like the 2A Plus arguably was on the back, you think, oh, well, I really like the look of that. And I can just about justify the price and some other compromises because I love the look of this. But this is one of the few phones, because of the asymmetry of the way the camera lenses are organized, that I just think it looks odd. And it's one of the people in our MeWe group said it looks like their daughter had designed it, out of Lego or something. And I can see where they're coming from there. It's got bits seemingly placed at random over this fake transparent back, which doesn't really show components, it just shows metallic stickers underneath the glass. And the telephoto, they've kind of bravely put the periscope telephoto hardware surfaced to the back, so you can see the extent of the telephoto. But they've kind of coloured it white, so it doesn't stand out. So that the end bit, which is the lens for the periscope telephoto, is kind of off to one side, and it's a diagonal. It's a bit sticking out everywhere. I just think it looks ugly.
Well, I disagree with you on in that respect. I think it looks interesting and different, and phones generally look really, really boring. Apparently, the reason that they've offset the lens on the back there, one of the reasons they've gone on record as saying, is that they did not want it to be yet another phone that looks like an iPhone. They wanted to make it different, so it wasn't the three lenses in kind of, symmetry with each other. And they're right. There are so many other phones out there that just look like an iPhone, and it's really boring. I tip my hat to Carl and Nothing Phone for doing something different and interesting and not boringly conservatively all the same all the time. And if it was not 799 quid, I would buy one of these. I quite like it,
Yeah.
and I like the design. I like it being different.
Yeah, as you say, the price is the sticking point, because if this was 599, it would get an awful lot more interest than people saying, hang on a minute, hang on, look at that price, that's ridiculous. Ignoring the sort of asymmetry, what's up with phones starting to include second mini screens on the back? The Unihertz Titan 2 we talked about last week springs to mind, and that's got its own little mini screen for showing a few notifications and a few icons and so forth. It's just bizarre. Back in the day, we did have a phone, the Yotaphone 2, you put in the notes. Yes, I vaguely remember that, with a full-size e-ink screen you could actually do things with full-time. Now, there was a point to that, but these little screens, it's just a gimmick. It'll be like the glyphs. They'll have it for a few years, and then they'll just drop it and try something else different, in my opinion.
Well, good for them. Something different. I mean, we want different things because phones are just so boring. They all look the same, Steve. And you seem to be happy to have phones just all boring and looking the same. Whereas my view is that let's have some stuff that looks different. There's so many OEMs out there that it can look different. Some of the, for example, some of the gaming phones out there are really interesting, and they've got displays on the back that do stuff. And yeah, it might be a gimmick, and it might be, but it differentiates them from the boring slab that everyone else is doing. I'm behind this. I like it.
I just think if they had all three lenses in a row, for example, that would still look different because no other phone's got three lenses horizontally in a row, and yet it wouldn't look messy. I just think it looks a bit messy. But again, maybe if they send a review device over and the speakers are great, and the cameras are actually pretty great.
Hang on a minute. The Pixel's got three cameras in a row. The Samsung's got three cameras in a row. There's loads of manufacturers that have got three cameras in a row. I don't buy that argument either.
The Samsungs are all vertically in a strip. The
Okay,
Pixels are
yeah.
on their own ledge, and it's a very pixel look. So I'm excluding the Pixel, but you know what I mean anyway. Anyway, I think it's something and nothing. If they send one for review, I'm very happy to put it through its paces, but I'm just a tiny bit underwhelmed, especially at the price. I came across a video on YouTube called These Old Phones Take Better Photos, and this was a good idea to say, well, modern phones that they take by default photos that are so HDR, so edge enhanced, so scream out the screen at you, and they pop fantastically, and that's what people want. But some of the old phones they've listed there, including the iPhone 4S and the Lumia 1020, and there was, I think, it was the Huawei, was it the P9 or P10, one of the two, they took very good shots for back in the day without any fancy gimmicks. You got what you actually shot. And I'd forgotten, actually, the 4S's focal length was 35 millimeters, which you'll appreciate as a photographer. It doesn't try and make everything go wide, wide, wide all the time, which the modern phones tend to do. So we'll link it in the show notes to this video, which is worth a watch. They do say, though, that the Lumia 1020 had shutter lag, which I would like to just stick my hand above the parapet and say it didn't. The 1020 never had shutter lag. So it had processing lags. You still got the shot you wanted with no delay, but you did have to wait 3 seconds while it processed before you could take the next shot, which I don't call shutter lag, but the 1020 still takes great photos. And he noted, as a Windows chap, you'll appreciate this, even today in 2025, Ted, you can plug a Lumia 1020 or indeed any Windows phone into Windows 11, and it just appears through the magic of MTP as a drive, and you can drag and drop photos and media and have fun.
Indeed, as you can with any Android
I
phone
know.
as well.
Yeah, but this was Windows Phone. Totally different OS, Ted. Long forgotten and long missed.
I do get it. Definitely. But I was more interested in the mono lens of the was it the
Huawei.
Huawei
Yeah.
device? To me, that was more interesting. Yes, you're right about the 35 millimeter lens, and some cameras have provided a 35 millimeter focal length on phones, but the mono thing was really interesting. I'd forgotten all about that. A dedicated for extra sharpness, not putting a layer of stuff in the way, and yet you could tell the difference, I think.
Absolutely, and it kind of made me want to try that in a modern phone, but I don't think there are any modern phones that have a monochrome, dedicated monochrome lens. It's all just software effects, which I guess is fair enough. But yes, it's a good shout out to these three old classic camera phones. So do go and see the link in the show notes. A link from you on YouTube Premium.
Just an article today that Rita El-Khoury put up, which just a couple of shows ago, we were both saying that we were against smart downloads in YouTube and YouTube Music. But she convinced me in this article, I'm just saying, to turn on smart downloads. Not that I go anywhere. I've got good cellular and Wi-Fi coverage most of the time. But it actually is quite a nice kind of fluffy feeling of having, 4 gigabytes of downloads rotating all the time and using technology and connectivity for its best purpose. Anyway, I'll link to the show notes. She may or may not agree with her what she says. As I say, we were poo-pooing it, and now I've changed my mind.
I did read it. Does smart downloads also apply for YouTube Music?
Yeah, I did both. So you can put it on YouTube Music, and I did. So YouTube and YouTube Music, but one switch is not for both applications. You've got to do them separately.
Right. So I just thinking ahead, this sounds like a good idea. So let's say I start listening to Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms album, and I'm listening to track one, and I've got the smart downloads turned on. Presumably, it's downloading the rest of the album in the background while I've got connectivity, and then I go into a big tunnel or into the countryside, and I've got the rest of the album cached and ready to go through the smart downloads. Is that how it works?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure if it's that smart. What I understood it to be is that it would routinely download, based on your listening pattern of behavior, it would download as much or as little as you tell it to do in the background. But whether it does it on the fly for when you go into a tunnel on what you happen to be listening, I don't know. We need an answer on that probably.
I will have some playing in the week because that sounds more fun and more interesting than smart downloading videos in YouTube, which I basically is just entirely random, whatever I feel like, and the chances of it downloading what it thinks I'm going to go to next are pretty slim. But for music, it's got a fighting chance. So I tend to listen to albums in their entirety, and then it can just look ahead in terms of the track listing.
But don't you, like me, for example, every Friday watch the Martin's Friday, what's it called?
Friday checkout.
The Friday checkout. So the system, presumably with my smart downloads, would know that every Friday I do that, and so it would put that on Friday night. If I didn't watch it, it would put it into my phone. And then on Saturday morning, when I'm in the tunnel, it would be on my phone because it knew that I would have watched it.
Yeah.
But do you see what I mean? It's supposed to, the algorithm should learn from you. Perhaps you don't routinely watch videos like I do.
Is the smart downloads thing per device or per account? If I turn it on for, say, my phone, do I have to also turn it on the desktop or tablet? How does that work?
In my experience, it's per device.
Well, that's good then. Yeah.
Because I've got it turned off on some devices and on others.
Yeah, because on my phone, of course, I've got a 1 terabyte phone, so there's no reason not to have this on. It would be great.
Yeah,
But on I've
exactly.
got tablets, and I've got even my laptop are very hard on space, and I really would resent 4 or 10 gigabytes
Yeah.
even being taken up. So I will play
No,
more with that. Yeah.
I think it's in isolation. But yeah, do have a play.
Yeah. Okay. Fairphone 6, Ted.
Just a quick one, really, to say that we spoke about the Fairphone 6 on the last show, I think. But it's been put through the iFixit kind of
Repairability.
guillotine, and as has been for the 5 and the 4, and I think even the 3 before it as well. It gets a 10 out of 10 for repairability. That was all really to be expected, probably.
It's impossible not to watch a video like theirs, or even to watch the Fairphone promos, really, and think, wow, I need a Fairphone in my life. And I know you've got one running on an obscure OS, but they do present an incredibly attractive proposition. And if you stop back and analyze it, you think, well, am I really going to be using this in 3 or 4 years' time and replacing these components? And the honest answer for you or I is no. But for the man in the street, who actually quite often buys a phone and keeps it for 6 or 7 years, the Fairphone could be absolutely perfect.
Maybe. I'm not sure. I think we live in a disposable society, and what Fairphone are doing is idealistic and, good for them, absolutely good for them. And I hope that people will do that and hang on to phones. We're just different. And most of the people we have in our group and most of the people listening to this are different as well. As you say, it's got to be Joe Public that they've got to get. And I don't know if Joe Public is convincible. I suppose the fact that Samsung and Google with Pixel and iPhone as they've moved into like 7 years of updates and the bragging rights about how long they're supporting, if that message gets out to people and then you've got Fairphone who are shouting about eco-friendly left, right, and centre as well, perhaps it will take off and perhaps Joe Public will buy into it and or before buying into it, become aware of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, am I being stupid? On MeWe, several times in the last day or so, you've mentioned the acronym M3E. What is M3E and what's it doing in this next news item? Do please explain.
I'm shocked that people don't know what M3E is. Come on, please. Material 3 expressive,
Wow.
expression. And And that's the new look Android 16 thing that is being laid out across all Android devices eventually. At the moment, of course, it's mostly being done on Pixels, and Pixels in beta seem to be getting some of it. The reason I was this flagged up on this occasion was because, well, firstly, I found that on my Sony Xperia 1 Mark 6, there was this new M3E animation going on within Gmail, and I thought, oh, that's odd. So immediately I just went to my Pixel, which is on the beta, and another Pixel that is not on the beta, and I thought, right, well, it's not working on here. But so for some reason, I've no idea why, the new animation is working on the Sony Xperia 1 Mark 6, and no other device I've got here. And as you know, I've got about 30 Android phones here, and I've checked all of them, and none of them have got it except the Sony. So I've no idea what that's about. But any thoughts? Did you ever look at my video of the animation?
I saw the thumbnail but didn't click it to play. But I can only
Yeah.
assume, though, that it's because Sony's implementation of Android is purer and more honest to the underlying APIs than many other manufacturers and their skins. Is that possible?
I don't know. You would have thought that Pixels will get it first, but I did throw out the question to the group in MeWe to see if anyone else had got it apart from me, and no one replied, so I don't know yet. I don't know. Anyway, it was
Sometimes, yeah.
an interesting oddity.
Sometimes these things are A/B testing, as they call them, and they push them out server-side updates for various people
Yeah,
to see if they get any
yeah,
bad reactions, and then they start pushing it out
yeah.
to more people.
If it was people, that would. I presumably my account signed into all those devices. Somewhere else it will pop up, but it hasn't.
Yeah, but it might be A/B for devices.
Yes,
Rather
not
than,
people.
or maybe devices and people. Who knows? It'll all sort itself out in time. You got a news item about the Sony Xperia 1 Mark 7, though.
While we're talking about Sony, I just thought I'd throw in the pot that it appears that story out of Japan, they've stopped selling and shipping the Xperia 1 Mark 7 because they reckon that there's all sorts of bugs going on with the device, random rebooting. Some people can't turn them on. Sony suggests a fix for it in terms of button combinations, and so they're confident that people should be able to do it themselves. But there's a bit of a mixed message because even though they're saying that people should be confident to do it themselves, they've also stopped shipping out the new ones. So if you can't get one at some point, or maybe it's just in Japan that you can't get one, then anyway, I'll link to the story in the show notes if anyone has any problems with that. Then there is a fix that you can do with button combination presses.
I'd stick to your Xperia 1 Mark 6 if I were you, Ted. I'd stay at number 6 and not go to version 7. And you wanted to talk about speed by coincidence in the groups.
For a number of those, really. And not just that reason, but a number of them. But yeah, the reason that I want to just quickly mention the speed is that I was again playing with the Xperia 1 Mark 6 this week, and I do a lot of swapping around between devices, as you know, and I know how quickly various devices catch up, and they turn on, and they download updates from the Play Store, and they copy data across, and they do the restore of SMS RCS, and I know how quickly devices work in those kinds of ways, and it just I just noted this week when I went back to the Mark set the Marks 1 Mark 6 how quick that process was, and I know it's got a Snapdragon 8 Gen 3 chipset, and it should be fast, but I've got other phones here that have got similar chipsets, and it's not. And maybe it's going back to what you were saying just now about it's just so clean. It's not being bogged down by, Samsung and Pixel and Motorola doing all their security stuff in a huge way in the background. But I just thought it was worthy of remarking that when you're using a Sony Xperia phone, you feel it being fast, disproportionately fast around
Yeah.
most things, compared to a lot of other phones out there.
Even compared to the Pixels, because the Pixels chipsets are, many people have proved, are slower than the generic Snapdragons, because the tensor's just not quite up to snuff.
And Motorola's in that respect are just not very good at all. But anyway, these are the Motorola and the Pixel are the ones that are supposed to be having a more clean vanilla experience. But actually, the Sony, as we keep saying, it does feel as though it's cleaner and more straightforward than most, and not bogged down with all sorts of stuff in the background.
Okay, and talking of device performance, and just to give your voice a break, I mentioned I've been to the Apple Store. I'm quite lucky, really, in that the local Apple Store is about 1.5 miles away. It takes me all of 10 minutes to drive there, traffic permitting. So I had my 2022, with almost 3-year-old now, iPhone 14 Pro Max's battery replaced. It was at 81% battery health, that's overall capacity. It's now 100% again, obviously, and it should see me or a future buyer good to go for another 3 or 4 years, I reckon. At least until Apple stops supporting the device, typically about 7 years after production, so about 2029. The cost was £95, including all the IP68 seal replacement and general wash and brush up from the service team, which I thought was quite, I was quite happy about, to get back to 100% capacity. I did ask about the speakers. You remember, I was complaining they'd lost their sparkle, and they did confirm, after they'd checked the grills for dust while it was all taken apart, that the phone speakers do lose some volume and sparkle with age, which kind of backs up my theory. But the speakers are still perfectly fine, by even by my standard. They're just not class leading anymore. Think of your beloved Xperia 1 Mark 6 and the iPhone 16 Pro Max, and I'm sure a few others, which they just they punch. They punch with bass, they punch with treble, and you think, wow, that's so clear, that's so loud. It's just kind of lost a bit of the clarity, but it's fine.
Did they not offer to replace them?
I could have asked for a speaker replacement, but I'm sure that would have cost another £100 or so. And this, they weren't so dulled. I thought, I can't live with this. They're just, I just only am comparing to other new devices that I even noticed. So I thought that would be being a bit picky. Anyway, just for fun, doing some maths. You know how I love maths. Assuming that I do use this phone until 2029, so another 4 years, and that it's worthless after this, which is not quite true, but let's go with that concept for now. I paid £1,200 for this 1 terabyte iPhone on the PSE Classifieds forum. So at that point in 2029, I'll have had 7 years of use. So that's £1,200 plus £100 for this battery, all divided by 7 years, which works out, deep breath, at 50p per day, total cost of flagship ownership, which is a bit of an artificial stat, but it's a data point, and I do wonder if other listeners have worked out, even retrospectively, their cost per day of various phone ownership. So do chip in the MeWe group. And I seem to remember, Ted, I think it might have been Tom Stewart, who said he had a rule of up to £1 a day total cost of ownership, along the same lines, factoring in purchases and depreciation. So yeah, data points welcome. Yeah, 50p a day, I'm happy with that for a flagship.
Are you CMF Pro 2 phone at £200 with 6 years of updates? That would be interesting to work out. It'd probably be about 10p.
Yeah, well, you've got to keep that one phone. Well, in your case, of course, it's so artificial because you change your main phone so often. But I do take the point. Yeah, if you start off from a cheaper phone, it's going to work out cheaper overall. What else have you been playing with this week, Ted? Where do you want to go?
My series of coverage on the Moto Edge 60, which is still here, and I just wanted to focus this week on the battery. The phone has got a 5,200 milliamp hour battery. Oh, there you go. There's an example, Steve, because the one that was sold in India was 5,600 or something. Again, a bigger battery was sold in India than global, so it's not uncommon. Anyway, so it's 5,200 milliamp hour battery, which is really, really good. It performs really well. The 68 watt wired charging, as we were saying just now, 65 is not far behind that at all. Sadly, there's no Qi charging. I mean, that would have been the icing on the cake, and you just need to add the thing in the back of the case, I suppose. It's a shame though, because the back of it's so nice. I've got a 100 watt GaN charger here, the one that you put me onto, and I, you know, the charging speeds are really, really good, from flat to full in well under an hour. You know, that's perfectly good, I think. I do again, however, question, How much would it have cost them really to put a Qi coil in the back, for goodness sake? I guess they must have done their research and concluded that not enough people are interested. But I don't know, it just seems like for a few dollars or whatever it would cost, it would have been a better thing to be doing than not. The battery performed incredibly well though, as usual with Moto phones. Heading for 2.5 hours on my 10% reading test, and usually with my average use, it's doing the best part of 2 days. So I think that the battery, as usual with most Moto phones, is really, really good, and it's a good, strong, big battery, particularly if you're in India. That was my focus for the week, really, on the Moto Edge 60. Lovely device, and it's still here. I'm enjoying it.
I think you're on the right lines in concluding that these companies do research on what people look for in a phone. And if hardly anyone says, I'm looking for wireless charging, they just don't bother putting it in. In other words, it's not a physical, a technical limitation whereby, oh, we couldn't squeeze the thick 1 millimeter of coil into the back, because we've seen plenty of really thin phones that have wireless charging in the current day. So it has to be a marketing decision, saying, okay, what are we going to prioritize? What are we going to put in? And you're right. I guess most people don't think of wireless charging. You stop the man in the street and say, what are you looking for in a phone? And they'll go through screen and cameras performance and so forth, cooling and staying cool and so forth. I bet 1 in 100 people might mention wireless charging, and that one person would be me.
Yep, and me, two people.
2 out of 100,
Talking of
2%.
Motorola, the Jim Fowle sent over his Klicks keyboard. Now, it's a topic we come back to now and again on the show. But this one was for the Moto Razr, and he had backed the whole scheme, and he got one delivered to him well ahead of our PR route. Sent it over. So that's great. Thank you ever so much, Jim. It's really good. It looks like they're charging £139 for this now. So just to explain for anyone that doesn't know, this is a Klicks keyboard, very much like the one that Steve's got for the iPhone, except that because it's for the Moto Razr, which is a flip phone, you can slide the closed Razr into the top of it, and the keyboard sits at the bottom, and it ends up looking like a BlackBerry or a Nokia E6 or something. And in theory, if you're happy to be typing on the small keyboard, it's pr a pretty good option. The trouble is though that with my fat thumbs, and you know what I'm going to say, is that the keyboard is so tiny that that I'm just crunching the keys all the time, and I just don't kind of However, not taking away from the fact that this thing is really beautifully made. So there's a real firm click whenever the keys are pressed. I guess over time, one, if you stuck with it, it would be better. It would be your muscle memory would get into it, and you'd start using it blind instead of looking at it all the time. Bear with me, because my point that I come to at the end of this is less so much about the keyboard, in actual fact, as the form factor. I had a few teething problems, incidentally. I couldn't work out how to get the at sign for love nor money. I had to look it up in the end, and then it, what you what. What we worked out was the fact that the keyboard is American. So I never thought of that. It's not a, even though my Motorola is set to British, the keyboard's American. So the at was under the L, and the P had the speech mark. And so when I figured that out, of course, it was working fine. But that was a bit annoying. Was yours like that?
I'd have to get it. I'll get it out of the drawer while you go on to your second annoyance, and I'll give you a verdict. Yeah.
It also got confused with Moto's own on-screen keyboard shortcut lurking in the way, but it turned out that this was down to Android's own physical keyboard settings. So it wasn't Moto's fault, and it wasn't Klicks' fault. It was actually Android physical keyboard settings. So, if you're going to get one of these, you need to kind of read up and make sure you know what you're doing with getting the thing out the way. The Qi charging is a real awkward and almost It almost feels as though it doesn't work properly, because if you slide the device into the case fully, so that the plug, the USB-C plug that goes into the bottom of the phone, is in place, the Qi charging just doesn't work. Now, just by accident, I slid, while the thing was still on the Qi charger, I slid the phone slightly upwards, so it was just about not in the plug was not in the port, and it started charging. And I thought, that's really weird. Even through the thickness of the back of the case, it was still working. And I could only conclude that what's happening is that when you engage the USB-C port, in terms of charging, all it wants to know about is wired charging and not wireless. But as soon as you remove it from that, it does the wireless charging. It was really odd.
On the iPhone, just I'm checking on the iPhone, if you plug in the Clicks keyboard, so it's occupying in this case the Lightning port, that doesn't physically disable in the device the wireless charging facility. It seems like Motorola is kind of hardwired it. If USB port is in use, wireless charging coil is disabled, which seems a bit mad.
Well, it might be interesting to try it for someone to comment if they've tried it on a iPhone that has got USB-C as well, to see if that is any different.
I did notice that Michael Fisher was saying, or one of the Clicks team was saying, that they were having some issues with Motorola devices and Clicks. And I'm just wondering whether that was one of the issues and whether there is a sort of thing that they
Well,
could fix via Motorola pushing out a firmware update that included this, disabling this disable, if that makes sense.
okay, well, I'll keep an eye on it. Jim's not in a hurry to get it back, so on our little circuit, that's fine. Checking for a new firmware confused it as well. That seemed to go into a loop. So you get this app, you download this app that is supposed to control it and all the rest, but when it was doing this update, it just went into a complete loop, and I had to turn everything off and back on again. Incidentally, the keyboard hasn't got its own battery. It runs off the battery that's in the phone, and actually, that is significant. In my testing, while it was plugged in, and particularly if you use the backlit keyboard, it is draining the battery in the phone. In probably more in a more severe way than one would want it to. So perhaps that can also be sorted out in some sort of firmware update as well. But the pass-through charging with the cable, so stick a cable in the bottom of the case, works beautifully. I tested that with my chargers and all the rest of it, and that works really, really well. So that's good. The Gemini key in the corner works fine, but it doesn't invoke Moto AI. It only invokes Gemini. So you can't get to Moto AI via that route, but you can use the key on the side to do that anyway. But yeah, beautifully made. I suppose on the as I say, the keys are really robust looking, and they're nicely slightly concaved. So there's no, it feels very much like a premium product. There's no question at all. But I can't help thinking also, coming back to the point I was making just now, but it's a bit, it feels like a bit of a novelty still. And my takeaway from all this is very much about the having the keyboard on the Razer. It seems to just improve the form factor for me. So when you open the phone up, it's ludicrously tall, like we were saying with Tim last week. It's just absurdly tall and long. Nobody in their right mind would want to do that. But when it's closed, it makes the Razer phone a little bit bigger and gives you something to hold on to as well while you're clutching it, while you're touching the screen. But it's not huge and it's not small. I'm trying to just very badly to describe it, but the benefit to me is more about the improved form factor of the whole package in your hand, not the keyboard and the keys. I think that's my takeaway for the time being. It'll be interesting to see what might change and get fixed down the line, though.
It kind of makes sense. If the Clicks keyboard is powered by the phone, then there is literal power running down through that USB-C port into the accessory. you can kind of see how that would trick Moto's implementation of Android into thinking, oh, power's happening down at the port. I don't need to look at the Qi wireless charging. But you can also see how that must be a software decision. I doubt that's hardware. So if it's software, then it can be fixed. I think I'd be optimistic that that would start working. Talking of starting working, did you get a chance to test the USB Type-C headphones with Click as per last week's PSC?
Yeah, it doesn't work. So the same thing applies. If you plug in USB headphones, the sound just continues to come from the speakers on the phone. So yeah, no, that doesn't work.
I assume it's because the data lines and the USB-C port are being taken up by all the traffic to and from the keyboard, and therefore they're not available for digital data coming through down, being passed through to the accessory, which is probably a limitations of the form factor and of the whole concept, really. I don't think that will ever be working. But you can use Bluetooth, can't you? I don't think that's a huge showstopper.
Yeah. But more of a showstopper for some might be the fact that the right speaker is muffled. So they on closer inspection of the device, they have tried to cut out a channel so that it pushes it out frontwards, the sound. But the trouble is that when it's open up and stupidly tall, that works fine. You can hear it more
like
clearly.
Like on the iPhone,
But when you close it down, the top half of the lid covers up that right angle channel, so it just doesn't physically, it just doesn't work when it's closed, which is a real shame. It's a bit muffled. It's not terrible, but it's not as good as it is without.
I tested that. That was one of the things that really worried me about putting Clicks on the iPhone, again with a bottom firing speaker. But the channel they've dug out on the iPhone, as you say, the channel, it actually works very well at bouncing the sound back forwards. In fact, it improves it, because rather than the sound going out to the right-hand side of you, it actually bounces it towards your face. So it's almost like Sony-like in that the sound is coming in the right direction. But yes, if the top half of the device then folds back to cover the channel, then you're kind of lost.
Yeah. Really odd, that is. There are various shortcuts on it. So like there were with other, you know, BlackBerries and what have you, space bars and, sorry, there's a button to the left of the space bar, which you press with G to launch Gmail, B for browser, N for notifications. That all works really well. I don't like the back of the device. The upper portion of it is really, really slippery. But the bottom part of it has got this textured feel to it. This much, much better. They should have just put that across the whole back, and that would have been so much better, and it would make it much, much less slippery. Finally, I would just say that this device is available for the Razer 50, the Razer 50 Ultra, the Razer 60 and Razer 60 Ultra, and all the American equivalents of those devices with different model names. So this one is quite tightly locked down to Razers of two generations. Presumably, you know, they'll have to make a new one if they change it radically for the Razer 70 series later on.
Yeah, I've just checked the Clicks here for the iPhone, and it is also an American keyboard. I mean, it's a bit much, really, to expect a small American company to make a dedicated keyboard for all these different international markets. In fact, it's the customization of keyboard devices for international layouts, which is what kind of broke the Planet Computers thing. They had to produce so many SKUs for all these different markets of all the different keyboards that they kind of ground themselves into the dust when it came time to, you know, sort out their supply chain problems. So I completely understand why all these Clicks are coming out with dollar signs, but I worked around it. And you can always pop up a software keyboard and pick the symbol of your choice.
You can, with a hotkey as well. That was my fault, really. I just hadn't thought for one minute that it would be not British, because I thought, as you say, you can easily work around it.
So you're persevering and you're going to continuing to play week on week?
Yeah, I am. I'm quite enjoying it. As I say, for the form factor more than anything. But while it's on there, I'm still playing and looking for opportunities to type and to test it out again and push myself and perhaps teach Mr. Tiny Brain to, you know, get some muscle memory going. And yeah, so as Jim is now in no hurry for it back, I'll continue to play.
Talking of devices and accessories, etc., being loaned by our good members in the MeWe group, Mike Warner, very kindly loaned me his Xiaomi 15 Ultra with the camera kit, the thing that impressed us all so much in Classified a few weeks back. So just a few first impressions. I have put two videos I've done during the week, and I'll put links to those in the show notes. First one concentrating on the camera kit, the second one concentrating on the device itself. But just for the podcast, first impressions, it's fine. It's up with many other flagships, though I would say it's one step below the top Samsung and Apple devices. Call it pixel level, really, in terms of screen and speakers, at least. It's not as good in the sun as the Samsung S25 Ultra and the iPhone Pro Maxes of this world, but it's good enough that you can at least see what you're taking a photo of, which is kind of where the biggest single unique selling point comes in. You buy the Xiaomi 15 Ultra for the camera. In fact, I'll go further, because the main camera isn't really any better than other flagships, despite the sensor size. You buy this particular device for the specific 200 megapixel, 4.3 times optical periscope telephoto with a 1 over 1.4-inch sensor. So the sensor, to put it into context, Ted, is larger than the Lumia 1020's main sensor. And this is the sensor of a telephoto, and it's got 200 megapixels available for computational zoom. So this is a zoom beast. And in my YouTube Shorts videos, which I doubt you watch because you don't like my vertical videos, I did demonstrate it. I'm shooting photos and video up to 15 times, and it looked fine.
I have watched your videos because I knew you were going to talk about it. But having a one-inch sensor should really be very, very impressive, shouldn't it? And not something that you kind of think, well, yeah, it's not much better than most of the other flagships, really. I think that's a bit of a shame if they've gone out of their way to do something a bit different.
I mean, it's a very, very good sensor, and you get natural depth of field from the aperture and so forth. It's just that the main sensors on that Samsung and Apple flagships, they're also very, very good. And at some point you think, well, okay, we really are at the law of diminishing returns here and trying to play spot the difference. Right. So, but yeah, it's great to have a one-inch sensor in a phone, but that's not the star of the show. The star of the show is the zoom. This next bit is not going to surprise you at all, Ted. I found HyperOS quite confusing, but you'd get used to it. You'd get used to it if it were your only phone, but you still have to allow a good hour for de-bloating it and setting things up as you like them and finding all the settings. So thank goodness for a search function in settings, otherwise you really would never find anything. But yeah, I found HyperOS not really for me.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. When I've tried using Xiaomi devices, I just don't like what they do with it, and I certainly don't like what they used to do when I last tried it with always on displays, which is not really always on. I don't know if you had got around to testing that, but it used to be capped to 10 minutes or when it felt as though you didn't need it, and it was just not, it wasn't controllable.
I thought it stayed on all the time it was in my testing. Now, I've sent it now back to Mike Warner, so maybe Mike can feed back. But it never went off in my presence. I didn't notice. But
perhaps that's changed then, which is good.
Yeah. Qi charging's nice to have. Of course, you'd expect it, of course, at the price, which is well over £1,000. But a bit like your Skyline, Ted, the HMD Skyline, in this case, it's dictated by the huge camera island, kind of limits the proximity and efficiency on many charging pads, because the Qi coil has to be much lower down on the phone than it would be on a regular phone, i.e. in the centre of the back. Now, the previous owner, David Burns, in our forums, had added a MagSafe ring, which helps a bit, because at least it lets you know where the coil is and lets you lock to my various MagSafe chargers. But if you have a Qi charger with a large flat surface, the camera island is so big it kind of props the phone up an angle, so you're not as close to the rings as you should be, which means that limits the Qi charging efficiency. So Qi is a bit of an afterthought and rather crocked, really, by the size of the camera island and its placement.
Yeah, you're right. The HMD Skyline was really bad for that. And in the end, I as you might remember, I found a case that's got kind of big corners on it. And then that did the trick. So workarounds for that kind of thing is not good.
Yeah, it arrived with what looks like a glass screen protector. So I normally would rip it off, but I've left it on for Mike and other future owners because it didn't really get in the way. Maybe that was, of course, was part of why I didn't find the screen stunning outdoors, because it was the screen protector I was seeing rather than the raw screen. But I wasn't going to be the one to desecrate it because it was quite nicely installed. It comes in the box with a 90-watt wired charging, so well done for that, Xiaomi. It's proprietary in terms of the charging speed, but the phone also supports lesser power delivery options, so no problems there. Also in the box is a nice clear TPU, which you like, Ted. And also the previous owner, David, had put in a third-party textured case, so I had no shortage of cases, given that the camera kit itself comes with a case, and it's a custom case onto which you can screw filter adapter rings, ND filters, and so on. And also it's got the latch and the thing which you can take this DSLR-like physical grip with a power bank built in, and it kind of clamps itself to this camera kit case. You saw that on my video. Did that kind of make sense the way I was presenting it?
Yeah, it did. And it was all nicely color-coded as well, particularly with your watch. I thought you put your watch on specially. It's all the same color.
Yeah, red.
It looked as though it was really well designed, really nicely put together, and very Lumia 1020 in some ways, but even better with more controls, as you demonstrated.
Yeah, you get the shutter button, obviously, is two-stage, and that works as well. But you get this lovely DSLR-like zoom nudge control just underneath your index finger, and you can nudge it either way smoothly and quickly. Really nice. And there's an instant video button as well. So, you know, you're taking a photo of something, and something happens on in front of you that you actually want to take a video of, so rather than fiddle with phone modes or camera UI modes, you just press that button and it just starts taking video, which I thought was a nice touch. OS updates on HyperOS until February 2031, so I think at least to Android 20. So there's lots to like, and if you're particularly into imaging and particularly into zoom imaging, you'll absolutely love the Xiaomi 15 Ultra. But it's a lot to pay just for that one trick, I would contend.
Yeah, as is often the case with lots of phones, which I say about my lovely Sony One Mark VI as well. You know, if you didn't want the things that it's really good at, you might get disappointed with the things that its other devices bring to the party. Yeah. And it's one trick ponies are not that good.
Yeah. Anyway, see my two videos linked in the show notes. We talked quite a bit about AI with Tim Evans last week, and it got me thinking, what phone-specific AI features do I want? In other words, nothing to do with on your desk. I get you're on your laptop and you're writing an article and you want help about something, like I did earlier with the specs of a new phone. So you ask Gemini, you ask Copilot, you know, summarize the specs of whatever, or research this topic, and it comes back with text that you can use. I get all of that, but on the phone... So you haven't got a physical QWERTY keyboard. You're just using it as a phone with smartphone applications. What AI would you want? And all I could really think is that I wanted a really clever voice assistant whereby I was out and about, maybe one hand's tied up. You get your phone out, you mash down on the AI assistant button, and you can talk to it and ask it things. I thought, well, that's the way to go. I wanted on my 14 Pro Max that facility. So just purely to be controversial, I retrofitted ChatGPT to my iPhone's lock screen, home screen, and control center, because on the new iPhones, 16 onwards, I think 15 onwards as well, you can get the ChatGPT kind of half-baked into Siri, and that's fine. But the older iPhones, iPhone 14 and before, you kind of have to do it manually. So I installed the ChatGPT app from the App Store, and then you can assign it as an app to launch on the lock screen. Of course, you can put it as an icon on your home screen. And you can also add it as a control in your control center. So see the video, again linked in the show notes. And I've kind of got, I've got very used now, Ted. Several times a day, I want to research something or look something up. So rather than unlock the phone and start typing it into Safari or typing it into a search function, I just activate the screen, lift the phone up, and mash down on the ChatGPT icon and just talk to it. And it's much faster than if you go via the traditional iPhone 16 way, where Siri has to interpret it and then says, do you want me to pass this on to ChatGPT? And you press on that, and then it takes 3 or 4 seconds to come back. This way, it's straight into ChatGPT, and it's their first-party app, and it just works so much faster. So see the link in the show notes, and I think I've been quite clever, and I'm actually quite glad about AI now, and I'm really liking ChatGPT.
Which you could also do, presumably, with Gemini if you wanted to. Just put the icon on the home screen and then do the same, just use it when you want to do plant it wherever you want across the system. I do agree with you. I think that when you're out and about, I did it today with I was with my dad today, and we wanted to find something out. And the first thing I did was went to Voice on Siri. Oh, Siri, went to Voice on Gemini and asked the question. And we both sat there listening to the answer. It was something to do with his health, one of his health conditions, and it worked really, really well. And he was fascinated to hear someone telling him about it. Worked superbly well. But my point was really where I meandered off from is that what you're doing with ChatGPT on an iPhone, presumably you could just do the same with Gemini or whatever other assistant you wanted to use.
Yeah, I guess I could have installed the Gemini app and put the same shortcuts to Gemini, and I
Yeah.
maybe I'll play
Yeah.
with that. I started with ChatGPT partly because I've seen various YouTube AI comparisons. And they've all come out saying ChatGPT is currently better than Gemini overall, and also the fact that
Ooh.
the newer iPhones do they the ChatGPT is the one they tie in with. So I thought I'd start with that. Yeah, there were several YouTube one guy did 30 different tests across four different AIs, and ChatGPT came out the winner by about a 10-20% margin. But they're all changing all the time, and I think it also depends which exact models are being used. So you kind of have to tell it which Gemini language model
Yeah.
you want to use, so
Yeah.
it's more complicated, I
There's a
guess.
whole bunch of them. If you call up Gemini on the desktop anyway, I'm not quite so sure about it on mobile, but you get the offer of 2.5 Flash, 2.5 Pro. Actually, there's only those two now, apart from upgrading to AI Pro. But there used to be about four different options on there.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been honed down now. But yeah.
I'm guessing you get the basic Gemini if you just use it as a voice assistant on the phone. But anyway, more testing, and these things are do change month on month. But that's what I've been playing with in terms of ChatGPT on the older iPhones. And we have to just cover how you're getting on with your Yola C2 community phone after last week's tips and help from Tim Evans.
I'm not convinced. As you know, as you mentioned earlier, I've got the Fairphone 3 Plus here with Ubuntu Touch on it, and as I was saying last week, I think that at the moment I'm preferring that. The Yola Selfish system kind of just loses me a bit in terms of the UI, but it's a huge physically the phone is huge, and it's not very well made. As I was saying last week, it's very much more a developer's tool than anything else. But if you were trying to use this as your main device, it's just huge. You have to reach up to the top left as well to go back a level, which is really annoying. Well, as an iPhone user, you probably won't think it is, but the only way back a level is right up in the top left-hand corner, which is a bit rubbish. Putting a passcode in every single time the screen goes blank, every time. There's no other option. There's no face. There's no fingerprint. There's nothing. And you've just got to fire it up, press the power button, and put your passcode in, which is not the end of the world. And we used to do that 15 years ago, but
You'd have thought that the front camera could be used for a basic face unlock, wouldn't you? That's surely
yeah, you
that's the
would, wouldn't you?
software.
Yeah, absolutely, but it's not. Anyway, there you go. I did work out in the end, if you set the screen not to time out for an hour, which is the maximum, it prevented me chucking it out the window at that stage. But yeah, that's the maximum. And of course, all that time it's burning the battery away. The LCD display on this community phone, the C2, is just diabolical. I've never seen such a poor LCD display. I do admit, yes, I'm coming from OLED most of the time, but even as LCDs go, it's crap compared to, like, for example, the Razer phone, which I've got here on Lineage OS, as you know, and even the Fairphone. This display is washed out. It's dull and it's terrible. It's like they've found the cheapest one they possibly can find to stick on the phone
Yeah.
because they know that it's only there for a developer thing, really. And the same is true about the UI. It's really sluggish across the UI. I mean, at first I kept restarting the phone, assuming something was wrong or trying to make it speed up. But it's just a dreadful experience right across the whole thing. The battery life is unbelievably diabolical. If you think that the LCD display is bad, the battery life is even worse. particularly on standby, but also in general use. And it's horribly slow to charge as well. Even with my 100 watt charger, it's just rubbish. Anyway, I haven't given up yet. After all the negativity that I just poured out about it is really interesting to see somebody doing something different. And there are parts about the UI, the selfish thing, that are really interesting. And I'm not going to give up on it. It's something different, and it's not a monoblock, and it's not a Samsung or a Google or a Microsoft or an Apple. It's something different. And as I was saying earlier about the Nothing phone, I seem to be the one that's prepared to be doing the different things, and you're going the traditional route with all sorts of things in the phone world, it would seem, at the moment. And I say, kudos to people for trying something different, including Yola and Selfish.
Is there a returns policy for a developer if you did decide, is there like a 30-day thing where you could send it back and get most of your money back?
Yeah, there is, but you'd have to, they wouldn't pay your
Shipping.
import duty.
Yeah.
So I'd lose 50 quid on it to be no 54 quid on it to
Yeah,
begin
yeah.
with before I know I don't want to send it back. I want to keep it. I want to
Okay.
see what's going to happen with it. I'll keep it at least until they want to start charging me $4.99 a month to support it after the first year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to ask, but why not consider a flashed Sony Xperia 10 running the exact same software? Wouldn't that solve the hardware quality problem and the size of the phone? Wouldn't that be a better for you?
It probably would. I mean, with hindsight, maybe that's true. But I felt as though, encouraged by Richard Yates, I felt as though I wanted to get this community phone to be in the hub of what was going on, and not to be, to see what everyone else is seeing in terms of development, and this getting everything straight from the horse's mouth sort of thing. And there is this genuine enthusiasm about the Yola C2 community phone. If you go and sort of scour the support forums and the community online stuff, and it's quite addictive in a sense. So yes, and I did once before have an Xperia 10 Mark, I can't remember, two or something,
Yeah.
running Selfish software, and I borrowed it from someone. I think it was Tim Evans actually, so I kind of had done all that. But yes, that would certainly fix what you're saying about dreadful battery and dreadful speakers and dreadful everything, the LCD display. So yes, but I wanted to get in on the community phone.
Fair enough, and well done for giving it a try. Photo of the week, you have picked something fishy, very fishy.
That's an amazing photograph. So Chris Clayton, taking some really amazing photographs. He goes out to Thailand on holiday quite regularly, and he must do nothing else out there except take photos, because there's so many of them, and they're such good quality. He has an eye for this going on. This one is a picture of a fishermen, Yok Yor fisherman. Which he's taken as usual with his iPhone 14 Pro Max, and the composition of this photograph is just perfect. I think the lighting and the exposure is just nailed. The frame is full of interesting elements. There's a silhouette in the middle right of this guy stood on this kind of water house thingy or whatever it's called, and it's just packed full of detail. Even his knee up is like the icing on the cake, because it just
Yeah.
makes the whole thing look really human interest. Someone stood there doing his fishing. The sky as the backdrop is really interesting as well. I'm not really sure. Maybe if we went to Thailand and stood with Chris, we could take photographs as good. I somehow doubt it though, because he just seemed to have an eye for getting this. He's very active on our camera creations group as well, which he takes photographs with his Sony camera in a similar ilk. So if you want to see more, then it's over there. I'm surprised you haven't joined that, Steve, with your interest in digital photography, because you'd really enjoy it. But anyway, this is another of Chris's excellent photos. I'm guessing that there's nothing there for you to criticize, is there?
It's almost a perfect shot, given that the low light and he's got the saturated reds and the sunset. It's taken on the iPhone 14 Pro Max, the same as me, and I'm guessing that Chris shot it in Pro Raw because there doesn't seem to be much evidence of, artificial sharpening. I can see with the nets catching the fish that edge enhancement and the standard routines would just go crazy on that, but it seems nice and pure, at least at the size that I'm viewing it at. So a good device, good shot, good framing, good colours. I'm amazed that that fisherman's apparatus, all those bendy canes and bamboo sticks and stuff, I'm amazed all of that is strong enough. If they had a big haul of fish, wouldn't it all just snap and break and fall into the sea?
Obviously not. Otherwise, they wouldn't do
Yeah. Anyway, it's a lovely shot. And yeah, PSC photos and well done, Chris. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Something in PSC classified. You've got a few picks for us before we finish?
Yeah, I'll start off with on the theme of Sony cameras. There's an A6400 body in there, which is worth snapping up, I think. Snapping up. It's boxed in excellent condition, original battery strap and charging cables. Never used the cable, that is. £500 for a Sony A6400. So that would be an interesting aside from our normal phones. The rest of it is taken up by Samsung Galaxy devices. There's an S23 Ultra in green, and there's also one in Phantom Black. The green one's 256 gig, 8 gig, and includes a stylus, original box, case, and all the rest of it, £305. And the other one is in Phantom Black. It's 512, 12 gigs, and that comes with a Samsung Galaxy 6 watch as well, Watch 6. And the 40mm version. We mentioned that last week. It hasn't sold yet, but that's in black. There's a nice little kit, that, a nice little outfit, £450. And there's a Samsung Galaxy S25, the baby one, 128 gigabytes, 8 gig, boxed, unopened, blue black color, £450. And bargain basement, there's a Galaxy A16, 128 gig, 4 gig, sealed, blue black in color, £80. I think people are getting these as freebies with buying a more expensive phone, and so they're moving them on. But yeah, so it's a bit of a Samsung week, really, if you discount the Sony camera.
I think I'd pick up that S25. I mean, it's if we're playing with the latest One UI developments, and for an unopened box, brand new device. I know it's on 128 gigabyte, but if we're just playing and having fun and enjoying Samsung's interface and AI and ideas, £450 seems like a good entry point. That'd be my pick.
Yep, definitely. Right up to date. And the S23s are both there. I do like the 512 gig version of that. And that comes with a watch as well. So if you don't want the watch, then there's the green one. It's a bit of a Samsung week. Lots of lovely stuff going on there. And MeWe PSC Classifieds group is where all that happens. If you want to join, you need to email me and we'll talk about it because it is a closed members only group. But otherwise, yeah, that's where our buying and selling goes. And we have lots of fun.
Indeed. Talking of lots of fun, we haven't got any guests lined up for the next month. It's just been partly me not getting around to ask people, I guess. But if you'd like to be on phone show chat, gentle listener, then do please drop me a line by any of the usual means. Actually, you can have your voice and we can chat to you and you can say your own rants and raves and phone history, and it will be wonderful. So don't be afraid. Ted and I are very gentle, so do get in touch and you can be a guest on PSC. I'm sure we'll find other people to slot in, Ted, over the coming weeks. If you can help us out in terms of beers and coffees for the articles and the videos and the forums and the podcast, then do think about buying us a beer or coffee. The usual links, paypal.me/TedSalmon and paypal.me/SteveLitchfield. Any last words from you, Ted?
Hot Hub UK. That's where it all happens. We've got a few podcasts coming up this coming week, so watch out for those. We're back on the track. We're back on the trail with both Projector Room and Camera Creations this week, so watch out for both of those, and we should move the agenda forward. So Pod Hub UK, if you get lost, then you can also find all the links to all the audio podcasts and all of the MeWe groups at tedsalmon.com as well.
Lovely. Thank you very much for listening. Show notes at stevelitchfield.com. A cheery goodbye from Ted.
Goodbye.
Catch catch you next week on the Phone Show Chat.